Hello, everybody. Welcome. I'm so glad you're here. I'm so glad to be with you all. And I'm really excited for our call today, which is supporting clients through the myth of perfection. But before we get there, let's take a little bit of time and settle in and just kind of reconnect to ourselves, to our lives, to everything. I don't know about you, but I find for me, just through this pandemic, it's like the days are not only blurring, but it's like I have to work a little harder to stay more connected to myself. Some of it, I think, has to do with the kids being home, but I think even more than that, it has to do with there's so much that I'm feeling personally and so much that I'm feeling collectively, that it's kind of easy to tune out or get overwhelmed. And so let's just start like this, so that you can just really locate where you are today. We do a little journaling, and it's very simple. I want you to start with the prompt of today I feel, or it can be today I am, however you want to start, and just complete that sentence into a paragraph. I'm going to give you about a minute and a half to write, and just write as fast as you can. Don't think too much on it. So I'd start with either today I feel or today I am, whichever you feel called to. And start writing, and I'll let you know when to stop. Today I feel, so we're starting just doing a writing prompt, starting with today I feel or today I am. And just write for about a minute. Today I feel, and then just write. Locate yourself. Just keep on going. If you don't know what to write, just go back to the original prompt, today I feel, or today I am, and just keep on writing. Another 20 seconds. Just keep on writing. And then you can bring that thought to a close for now. And take a moment and just read over what you just wrote. Just read over what you wrote with your coaching hat on, looking for awarenesses, patterns, places to go deeper, insight. And when you're done reading over what you wrote, take a moment and intentionally craft a coaching question for yourself that you can journal on later. So take a moment and intentionally craft a journaling question for yourself. you can journal on later. Use all of your listening skills as you read through what you wrote. Use your creating awareness skills and your questioning skills and any strategizing skills, any things that want to come into play to create a really good coaching question for you to journal on later based on what you wrote. Really take the time, take an extra 10, 15 seconds, think about the words that you're using as you craft your question. And then I want you to add a second question for you to look at later to it, which is simply, what is an action step I can take? What is an action step I can take this week? So this is just a quick, easy little self-coaching exercise. Like I said, I use it sometimes just to help me locate myself so I can connect back in to me, to what's most important, to where I am. And it's a great little coaching, way to practice coaching as well, or at least practice writing, crafting questions. All right. So we're going to continue our module, our bigger overarching module, on obstacles and different obstacles that, clients may bring to you, or rather different tools in your toolbox to be able to work with clients when they bring different kinds of obstacles. So we've looked at resistance archetypes, we've looked at befriending fears, we've looked at rewiring negative thought patterns, and today we're going to look at the myth of perfection. It's another inroad in to a lot of client obstacles, no matter what they bring forward. I shouldn't say no matter, but to a lot of obstacles that clients bring forward. And in a way, in some ways you'll see it's a continuation of our rewiring negative thought patterns as well, because perfectionism has a lot to do with a particular type of negative thought pattern. So I think it's going to bring all of that together for you even more. So let's start here. What is perfectionism? Well, there's a lot of different ways that you can define it, but for our purposes today, I'm just going to define it in a couple of different ways, and you can add your own definitions too. Perfectionism is the need to get it totally right, right? Whatever it is, to get the essay totally right, the presentation totally right, the coaching session totally right, the relationship totally right, the house totally right, the closet reorganization totally right, right? So perfection is the need to get it totally right, or it's the not being happy or settled or satisfied unless something is absolutely perfect. So that feeling of not being happy or settled or satisfied unless something is absolutely perfect. Or being in fight or flight if you didn't get it totally right or as you expected it to be. Or being in fight or flight because you're scared of not getting it right. Or freeze, right? Judging yourself or others harshly if it's not totally right. So if you're here, you already, I don't have to tell you why perfectionism can be an obstacle for people. But I'm just going to share a couple of pieces to activate, stir our cauldron a little bit more around this. So first I'll just start with a story, or an anecdote, really. It was my first business when I was in partnership with Dawn Copeland. We were baby coaches and baby ritualists and baby entrepreneurs. And this was a really long time ago, by the way. It was in 2001, before we had all of the technology that we have now. And Dawn and I had been working already, you know, for about a year or two. And we realized it was time for a website. So that's why I say this story is dated, because now so many people start their businesses before they even bring clients on. They have a website, which, by the way, is a myth. You do not need a website to bring on clients, but that's a story for another day. But anyway, back then in 2001, you know, a website, you didn't necessarily rush to create a website. You shouldn't necessarily rush to create one now. Anyway, we've been in business for about a year or two at least, and we really wanted to create a website for ourselves. And we hired a graphic designer to help us create a logo and to help us create a website. We put down a little bit of money, and then the graphic designer gave us questions so that they could start figuring out what is this logo going to look like, and then what is the feel of the website, and how are we going to lay things out. And Dawn and I literally took 12 months to be able to answer the questions, to write the copy, to do all of it. And it was not for lack of us not being able to answer the questions or for lack of us not being good writers, because we both were. It was not for lack of putting effort towards it. It's not because we were too busy and we didn't have the time. It was simply because the both of us were stuck in perfectionist mode, and we needed to get it exactly right. And anytime we would write something, we'd say, no, that's not, it's in the ballpark, but it's not exactly it. And we would revise and revise and revise and revise. The only reason we finally got that website done, it was probably even more than a year, is because the graphic designer, who was also kind of programming the thing, said, I'm not hanging on anymore. Like, if you don't want to lose your money, you got to settle on something, right? So that's one way that perfectionism can be a problem. I'll give you just another anecdote. I have a friend who I've been friends with forever, since grade school, and she desperately wants a partner, desperately, desperately. She's in her mid-40s now, and still does not have a romantic partner, and it's because of her perfectionism. Every time she goes out on a date, it's like, this guy has too much facial hair. I don't like this guy's career. But you know, like all the things, right? She wants to get it totally right. So perfectionism can stop you from actually getting things done, or it can make things take much longer than they need to. Perfectionism can rob you of your confidence. As I said before, it can activate you to self-judge and say awful things to yourself. It can take you out of your process. And even when you're in process, your perfectionism is going to tell you that you're not even in the process in the right way. Perfectionism can come up in any area of your life, of a client's life. It can come up with work, with how you feel about your coaching, with your creative work, with your parenting, with your romantic relationships, with your friendships, with your home, with your sex life, with your appearance. It may have already come up with sacred depth, like feeling like you're not doing this you're in this perfectionist mode and feeling like, oh, you can't even really show up for the program because you haven't done it perfectly already. Right, so let's take a moment here and kind of take the temperature on some of this. So on a scale of 1 to 10, how perfectionist are you? 10 is like super crazy perfectionist. All of the things that I shared, you know, all of that happens for you. 1 is not perfectionist at all. On a scale of 1 to 10, how perfectionist are you? Where are the places that your perfectionism comes up? Where are the places where your perfectionism comes up? And, you know, I didn't mention, and let me mention this too, sometimes our perfectionism can get projected onto other people. I do that with my husband, right? When he's not completely, doing something perfectly, you know, he hasn't cleaned the kitchen exactly the way I want it to, whatever it is. It's like, he's the worst, you know. It can get stuck in that sometimes, right? So where are the places that your perfectionism comes up? And even take a look at your life right now. Are there places in your life right now where things are taking much longer because of perfectionism, or where you're in freeze because of perfectionism, or where maybe you're doing it but you're judging yourself because of perfectionism? My next question. All the places that your perfectionism comes up, what are the positives about the perfectionism, right? Because it's not all bad. We need to honor the ways that our perfectionism helps us, right? So for the places that your perfectionism comes up, what's positive about it? Maybe it helps you do a really good job. I know my perfectionism kind of pushes me to be better and better. All right, a couple more questions just for you to kind of take a look and assess. I'm going to give you some complete the sentences. So complete the sentence, or, you know, write a little bit, kind of like we did at the start of the call. Being perfect will save me from. Let's use that as a writing prompt. Being perfect will save me from. And just write as fast as you can for about a minute. I'll let you know when your time is up. Being perfect will save me from. ... Fun going. Being perfect will save me from. And you can bring that thought to a pause for now. And I've got two more writing prompts. Next prompt is, it's important to be perfect because. It's important to be perfect because. Write for about a minute on that one. It's important to be perfect because. It's important to be perfect because. Ongoing. It's important to be perfect because. Good, and you can just take another moment and wrap that one up. And then one more writing prompt. My parents, or you can also insert guardian if that's more appropriate for you. My parents or guardians expected me to be perfect by. My parents or guardians expected me to be perfect by. And write for about a minute on that. Just keep on writing, even if you're not sure what wants to come. My parents or guardians expected me to be perfect by. Keep on going. Got a couple more moments on this one. Okay, you can bring that thought to a close. And just take a moment and read over all that you just wrote. So giving your hand a rest, too, because I still have two more journaling questions for right now. But so for now, just read over all that you just wrote. Really take it in. Okay, two more questions for right now. You guys know this, but just as a reminder, I always ask you these journaling questions and self-inquiry questions. There's always two purposes. One is for you to create awarenesses for yourself, for you to do your own inner work. But the other is for you to really lean into some different things that your clients might be experiencing, right? Just to have the wisdom doesn't mean your clients are experiencing things exactly as you've answered them at all, but the more that we can understand ourselves, the more that we can do our own work, the more we bring to be able to understand our clients who are in these situations. Right, next question. Who in your life do you expect perfection from or near perfection from without realizing it? Who in your life do you expect perfection or near perfection from without maybe even realizing it or with realizing it? Who are you holding to too high standards? And then last question for now, a subset of perfectionism is the expectation that growth or transformation of any kind or any kind of accomplishment need to be neat and linear. So I'm going to say that again because I think a lot of us can fall into this. A subset of perfectionism is expecting growth, transformation, or any kind of accomplishment for that process to be neat and linear instead of messy and cyclical. The truth, of course, is that soul work takes time, accomplishment takes time, right? And it oftentimes works in cycles. So how does this subset of perfectionism show up for you? The expectation that growth, transformation, or any kind of results or accomplishment should be neat and linear, and if not, then it means that it's an imperfect process. Right, and then you go into all of those things we were talking about before. How does that show up for you? All right, let's pause here. I'd love to hear from some of you. What's coming through so far? Star 2. What are you seeing so far? What's coming through? Anne. Are you there, Anne?
Oh, sorry. Besides that it kind of drives everything, I think I never realized how deeply the fear, not just of being judged, but being mocked, drives this. The question that really kind of came out richly was the prompt for, it's important to be perfect because, and I didn't expect to see myself writing, other people will mock and judge you for your failures and shortcomings, no matter how well you fix it later. You never live down that first failed attempt. Yeah. People are always waiting and watching for you to screw up so they can jump on you because of it. And if you're perfect, you won't give them an opening to do that to you. And then there was more. And there was another piece of it with feeling like, and there was a sort of a thread that came up in a couple of them that somehow, if I just get it right the first time, then I won't have to spend unexpected and unplanned time later fixing an earlier screw-up when I really want to be moving on to something else which then I see loops into expectations about what, you know, the question that you just asked, which was the subset of perfectionism, the expectation of linear and neat instead of messy and cyclical, that it kind of locks into a really vicious circle of having to have everything right so that nothing ever gets messy in its process, even though on some level I know that that absolutely is how things go. Every time it gets messy or nonlinear, it feels like a failure.
Yeah. I'm glad all of this is coming up, and it's great for all of us to hear, right? And so first is this fear of the mocking. I can tell that you can see how much that's driving a lot of the perfectionism and probably like a lot of the actions that you take. And it's like, you know, I think there is a saying, some kind of saying or adage, you know, get it right the first time, so, whatever it is. So there's some truth to that. We want to create strong, intentional foundations to start things in, right? But not to the point of we need to get it perfect and it can't be messy or else we'll have to go back. So I'm glad all of that's coming through for you. Thank you for sharing.
And it feeds itself too, and that's a thing I'm kind of curious. We do seem to have, at least in certain places, certainly like in middle school, where the kids who are the smarty pants, who do tend to excel, it wasn't my imagination that when I was a kid, I got mocked if I publicly screwed up, because there was a lot of, oh, look at that, little Miss Perfect, you know, got a 99 on her test instead. Or, oh, you know, she made a mistake or got in trouble, and oh, ha, 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 ha. And so it just kind of reinforces a much more kind of visceral social survival level that I can't win if I get it right. And I can't win if I screw up either, so I'm just screwed.
Yeah. And this is important for you and for all of us, for your middle grade self, that was true. But for your adult self, you have different resources.
Yeah, I haven't integrated that at all.
So I'm glad you're sharing. Yeah, we can play with that. Good.
Yeah, thanks.
Christine, I'm so glad you're back and feeling better.
Oh, thank you. I'm so excited to be back and feeling better. For me, what was the big aha was in answering the question of it's important to be perfect because, and I wrote, that is what is expected of me by who? And it was my mother and father. But what immediately came was that both my parents suffered from severe mental illness when I was a child. And there was this awareness that they needed me to be perfect, A, because, you know, it was programming that they were operating from in their own lives, but also B, because they were having such a hard time managing reality, they needed me to be perfect so that there was one less thing for them to have to deal with, if that makes sense.
Yeah, 100%. That's so much pressure for a little kid to be perfect, or else their parents are just going to fall apart.
So, but having that understanding that it was their illness that created that, I found that was just kind of really, it just felt like it was a lot easier for me here in this moment to just kind of go, oh, that makes such total sense, right? Especially for me coming out of being so sick lately. It's like, oh, I get what that feels like to not feel like I can't handle one more thing, right?
And how does that, how does that understanding help you see your perfectionism or navigate your perfectionism?
It lets me sort of let go of it. The image I have is kind of like of taking it off like an apron and saying, oh, I don't need this anymore. Like, it's like I've been relieved of it or freed of it. And it's like, okay, I can hang this on the, you know, I can hang this on the hook here on the wall and thank it. And it's like, oh, now I can move on from that.
Beautiful. Good. Thank you for sharing.
Thank you.
And I'll take one more. Joe. Are you there, Joe? Are you there? All right. It looks like maybe not. Okay, I'll come back to you, Joe. All right, let's continue. So now that you kind of have a baseline and a little bit more exploration around perfectionism and how it shows up for you and some of the origins, here's what I want to say next. This is really important. The reason why this call is called Supporting Clients Through the Myth of Perfection is because perfectionism is actually a myth. There's no such thing as a human being who is perfect, and there is no such thing as a perfect anything. For a human being, it is a myth. We cannot achieve perfection on anything. Perfectionism is truly only for the gods or earth energy, you know, whatever resonates for you around spirit. So why am I pausing on this? Why am I like, because in some ways it's so obvious, right? But what happens is when we get caught in perfectionism, it's almost like we get caught in this myth that we have these powers that no human being can have. When we get stuck in the myth of perfection, not only are we stuck in trying to be a god, trying to be something other than a human being, but we're also actually engaged in black and white thinking. Myth of perfection is black and white thinking in this way. When we get caught in our perfectionism and in this myth of perfection, there are only two realities, perfection or failure. Think about it for a moment, right? When you get caught in the myth of perfection, when your perfectionism takes over, those are the only two choices, right? You could get it that, you know, like Anne was saying, the 99 on the test or the 90 on the test, but it's as good as failure if it's not 100. It's this black and white thinking, and this is what happens. This is really important. When we get caught in the myth of perfection, what actually happens is that we end up ping-ponging back and forth between perfection and failure. So what that means is we strive for perfection, right? We think we're a god. We strive for perfection. And when it doesn't happen, or, you know, because we just get so scared that it might happen, whatever it is, it's like the ping pong ball gets hit by the paddle and we just get slammed back into I'm a failure. And then we're in I'm a failure, I'm a failure, I'm a failure, until we decide that we're a god again, right? We just go straight to the other pole, that we can be perfect, and we try, right? I shouldn't even say try. We go for the perfection, and then we don't hit the perfection, and then we get slammed back into the failure. There is no middle ground in black and white thinking, and when we're caught in the myth of perfection. But middle ground is actually where reality is. Because as human beings, and any project that we, you know, attempt as human beings, the reality isn't perfection. And also, there's no such thing as being as an utter failure. There's always gold in something. The middle ground is the only real place. And when I say middle ground, I don't mean mediocre. I mean just not the extreme perfection or the extreme utter failure. That middle ground is actually real life. It's where all the gold is in life. But when we get caught in the myth of perfection, we totally skip over the real life and the gold. And we just look ping-pong back and forth these two poles that are not based in reality for human beings. Okay, I'm pausing because I really want you to take that in. And actually, I'd love to hear from one or two of you. Well, now let me ask these journaling questions, and then I'll open up for shares. So let's go a little bit deeper with this black and white thinking and this idea of the myth of perfection. First of all, take a moment and just jot down what's connecting for you right now. What are you starting to see? What's becoming clear for you? All right, next question. Where in your life or work are you engaged in binary thinking? So the question again is, where in your life or work are you engaged in binary thinking? And examples of that are, I'm either rich or I'm poor. I'm either totally beautiful and sexy or I'm gross and disgusting. I'm successful or I'm a failure. I've got spaciousness, or I have no time at all. I'm either healthy, or I'm super sick. Right? Where in your life or work are you engaging in binary thinking? My marriage is wonderful. My marriage sucks. Where do you do that ping pong, or just the perfection and the failure? Nothing else. Next question, how does binary thinking impact you on the inner and outer level? How does binary thinking impact you on the inner and outer level. In other words, how does it impact how you feel and your experience of things? And then how does it impact your actions that you take and what you create? And then last question for now, where was perfectionism and binary thinking modeled for you? Where was it modeled for you, perfectionism, binary thinking? All right, let's pause here. We've still got a lot to look at today, but I want to pause here for a moment and hear from one or two of you. Star two, what are you seeing around the myth and the binary thinking? What are you seeing around this idea of the myth and the binary thinking? Cho. Hopefully I can hear you this time. Are you there, Cho? Try this again. Cho? Oh, Cho, it's not working. I don't know why I can't hear you. Try and come back to you. Who is this from Wisconsin? 6264.
Hi, this is Emily.
Hey, Emily.
Hello. So I'm realizing where I thought that I might be flexible and flowing. I'm really binary. Black or white.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, very much so. Very much so in birth personally, you know, like that's where all that negative self-talk is and therefore the freezing that I've been feeling here for a while. This is so timely and so like ridiculously spot on. So I am very binary. Thank you.
I think a lot of us are, which is why this is such an important topic. But I'm glad you're able to see it because I can feel it's already starting to loosen some things.
Yeah.
Just by seeing it. Good.
Yeah.
Thanks. All right. Who is this? 0004.
Hi, Joanna. It's Suzanne.
Hi, Suzanne.
When you were talking and you gave the example of the test, like you can get 99% on the test or it's as good as failure,
mm-hmm.
And then you asked the question, what's connecting? When I did this thing recently, like within the last week, and we had to list all our achievements, like from our entire life,
mm-hmm.
and I sat there and I thought, I don't really achieve much.
mm-hmm.
And when I wrote it down, even when we went around the group, and I was like, but it wasn't what I set out to. So like I got an honours degree and I was like, oh yeah, but it wasn't first class, so it doesn't count. Or I got a Bachelor of Medical Science, but I didn't get the Bachelor of Medicine, so it doesn't count. You know? And it was like all these things. I lost a lot of weight, like 170 pounds, but I aimed for 180, so it doesn't count. You know? And it was
yeah.
like, holy cow. It's exactly what I set out for, or it's failed. There's no in between. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so important to see that, right? Because already it just shifts how we kind of can see our lives, right? It's like, oh my gosh, we're always approaching it with this perfection or failure. Good. I'm so happy that you're able to see that. Thank you for sharing.
Thank you.
Show, I'm going to try you again. I think you're
okay.
On the phone now. It will help. There you
yeah.
are.
Yeah, hey, can you hear? I didn't know what was going on. I was like, is my
That's all right. I wasn't doing
it perfectly. okay, yeah.
But see,
so
you still got on.
Still got on. I figured my way around it. So this is clearly, even though I think I don't think black and white, obviously by the evidence, that is really a big part of me getting very stuck with it has to be a certain way or I can't put something out. And then if I don't do it, then it just kind of shows that I'm not perfect. I guess you call it perfect. Mm-hmm. Right? So my unwillingness to be imperfect also creates a situation where I don't act, and then on top of that, then that kind of like proves the point, you know?
Yeah, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. See, I suck. See, I'm an utter failure. See, I
So with met with a constant resistance, and there's something about safety in it that I can definitely sense, and then there's an aspect where it also distracts me, that I keep focusing on not the wrong stuff, but I'm focusing on things that are not important to focus on perfection around or whatever it is, and then that keeps me like totally just going in circles. It's definitely, there's a blind spot in there for sure.
Yeah. Good. I'm glad you can see all of that. It's so important.
Yes.
So, okay. Let's keep on going because I want to get to what to do about all of this. But even just seeing all of this is so important. So there's just one other piece before we get into, you know, how to work with myth of perfection. There's one other piece that I want to mention briefly, important for you to know for yourself and or also to spot with clients, which is that sometimes the myth of perfection can show up, in a way that you can notice it is if it's hyper or hypo. This is very much related to shadow. I'm not going to get into all the ins and outs, but just to say that if you are working with a client or working with yourself and they show up as the opposite of a perfectionist, it may be that the myth of perfection is at play for them. So, for example, if you've got a client that shows up as the sloth or the lazy one or the mistake maker or the sloppy one, the failure, right? Those are also signs that you might want to work with the myth of perfection. When someone is stuck in the myth of perfection, they might show up as the hyper, like making sure they cross all the dots, dot all the I's, cross all the T's, overworking, you know, like doing, making sure they get it right. That can be one sign of the perfectionist. But another sign of the perfectionist is the exact opposite, right? That sloth or the lazy one, the sloppy one, mistake maker, the failure. So just take a moment and explore if any of the kind of more shadowy ones come up for you, the opposite of the perfectionist. Do any of those show up for you, the sloth, the lazy one, the mistake maker, or the sloppy one? And if they do, how do they operate for you? We can do more work another time with some of these shadows. But it's just good to be aware, right? And to know that they are a sign that you or a client might be stuck in the myth of perfection. So how do you know when a client is stuck in myth of perfection? Like I said, act like one of those archetypes I just mentioned. Or if you've got a client that keeps on going back to make sure X is good enough, right, whatever X is, that's a pretty good sign. That myth of perfection is rolling around. If you've got a client that just won't publish or put something out there or go on the date or whatever, you know, because they need to get it right, a myth of perfection might be a good thing to work with. If you've got a client that a lot of negative self-talk comes up, particularly around their performance around things, myth of perfection is something to look at. If you've got a client who's similar to Suzanne, what Suzanne was sharing of this discounting of self, one of the tools you can use is myth of perfection. So how can you work with myth of perfection? Well, number one, just creating awareness, right? So asking questions, creating awareness along the lines that we've been looking at today, creating awareness around the myth, creating awareness around the binary thinking, creating awareness around what their perfectionism, like we've looked at today, what it's going to save them from, or what their parents expected of them, or why, or, you know, creating awareness around the myth and how it operates for them and what's going on. Oftentimes when I just look at it that simply with clients and talk about the ping pong, and, you know, it's like already, right, so much opens up and you can get really far. So simply just taking in the wisdom of the call today is a great way to start. But there are other ways as well that you can work with myth of perfection or other kind of tools to add to that. So I will create awareness as it comes up, right? If I see someone is going back to make sure things are good enough, negative, you know, all the things I spoke about before. But if I know that I have a client that's prone to perfection, at the beginning of any kind of project that we work on, I'll bring their perfectionism into the mix. And kind of set a foundation so that they can look for signs if their perfectionist is showing up and already like preemptively strategize around that. Another thing that's really important when you're working with a client that's in the myth of perfection is to let your clients know that you, their practitioner, is imperfect. You're imperfect, right? Even our call today, if I would approach this call as like, I've gotten over all these issues, I am perfect, right? It's like, you know, then you're not going to allow yourself to be imperfect, right? We always need to remember energy follows energy. I feel like I haven't said that in a while in this program, so I'm going to say it now. Energy follows energy, right? And the more that we can let our clients see that we're imperfect, but not only that we're imperfect, but we've survived, right? Like that we can still achieve, that we can feel, we still find satisfaction and beauty in our lives, even with all the imperfection, it gives permission for them to move out of the myth as well. And you know, I'll just point this out to you. Part of the problem with some parenting and with some governing and with some leadership, right? Any of that is that imperfection is not consciously owned and worked with, right? So with kids, sometimes the parents try to say, like, what I'm doing is perfect, right? And so energy follows energy. The kids feel like they need to be perfect. But the kids also see that the parent is not perfect, and so then it makes imperfection not okay, right? When the parent doesn't consciously own it and work with it. When anyone that is governing doesn't consciously own it and speak to it and speak to how things can still flourish even when there are imperfections, leaders as well, right? So we, as practitioners, we are leaders, and we need to own our imperfections, not in a victimized way, not in a failure way, but in a way where we really model that everybody is imperfect. And it's okay to be imperfect. Along with that, when we're working with a client who is caught in the myth of perfection, we need, as practitioners, we want to check our own perfectionism filters. So back to our listening skills and checking our filters. What can sometimes happen is, because we're all prone to perfectionism or to binary thinking, if we as practitioners aren't aware of our own perfectionist tendencies or any of our own binary thinking, black and white thinking, we're going to end up bringing that expectation into the container with the client, into a project that the client is working on, into a relationship that a client is pursuing, et cetera, right? So we just really want to make sure that we're checking our own perfectionism filters, not just for the client, but for ourselves in our coaching, right? So, I mean, I am just, the more experience that I have as a practitioner, and the more mastery that I gain, the more humbled that I am. And what I mean by that is, like, with each passing year, I realize more and more how imperfect I am and how not a god I am ever going to be when it comes to supporting my clients. And that is actually an asset, right? The moment that we bring the myth of perfection into our client work is the moment that we've become, in our minds, a failure, right? Back to the perfection versus the failure and the binary thinking. The moment that we bring our perfectionism into our work with our clients is the moment that we become attached to outcome. Because we make it mean so much about our value and our worthiness and our future if we're not perfect, right? So we want to check all the different perfectionism filters. Another important piece or tool, and this is one of my favorite, it's such a, so simple, but it is one of my favorite tools of all time. I'm so excited to share it with you. And it's something that I use with myself, not only with my clients, but with myself very regularly when I see that I've moved into perfectionism, especially when I see that I'm being really hard on myself. This is one of my go-to tools. I mean, I've shared it with some of you before in other programs or whatever. It's called Even Though, Nevertheless. It is such a powerful tool for bringing ourselves and bringing our clients out of black and white, binary, perfectionist thinking and into that reality, that middle ground place that I was speaking about before. So the way even though nevertheless works is very simple, but again, it's really very potent, is you basically complete, it's a complete the sentence that you do a number of times. So for example, let's say you've just had a coaching session, and your myth of perfection is kicking in, and the session didn't go perfectly, and you're just hating on yourself around how much it sucked, you know, how much you sucked, and you're not wanting to do further outreach to clients, and you're like, I don't know how this client is ever going to continue with me, right? You go into all of the places that the myth of perfection can take us to. Use even though nevertheless. So what it might look like is this. You write it out. Even though my client didn't have a, you know, bring her to her knees breakthrough by the end of the call, nevertheless, I held really sacred space and my client felt seen, heard, and loved. Even though my client didn't have a bring her to her knees breakthrough by the end of the call, nevertheless, I helped create awareness around patterning with her parents, and I know that she's going to continue to work with that. Even though my client didn't have a bring her to her knees breakthrough by the end of the call, nevertheless, she felt satisfied by the time we were done. Nevertheless, we made incredible headway towards the breakthrough. Nevertheless, she left with three really solid action steps. And I know I'm going to hold the container for her and help hold her accountable. Nevertheless, she understands so much more about herself, right? On and on and on and on. So can you guys see what even though nevertheless does here? I want to just break it down a little bit and share why it can be so powerful. The even though honors the truth, right, which is that it wasn't perfect or it didn't come out as expected, right? We never want to deny it. Back to our creating awareness skills and honoring what is, right? We want to honor what is or else we don't get buy-in either from our client or from our egos, right, whatever it is. So even though it doesn't deny, right, the situation. It's not just like blowing sunshine up our ass, right, or our client's ass. It doesn't deny the situation. It is what it is, even though this didn't happen, right? Even though I didn't fill my program with 20 people, even though that date really, you know, didn't work out, right, whatever it is. So the even though honors. And then the nevertheless takes it out of the failure zone into the reality, right? Because we acknowledge what is, what, you know, not only what is that didn't work, but what is that did work. And what happens is, and this is where we go back to the rewiring, thinking about everything we learned in with the neuroplasticity and rewiring the negative thought patterns, when we can do this. So I usually recommend, like when I'm working with a client or I'm working with myself, we do it at least 10 different statements right then and there in the session, if not more. And then we do 15, 20, even though nevertheless statements on that same scenario, whatever the scenario is we've been working on, for 7 days in a row after that. Now, sometimes the same nevertheless will come up on different days. That's totally fine, right? But the idea is that you don't just do one even though nevertheless once. It can help a little bit to shift a perspective, which is good, but to really start rewiring while continuously being in the new perspective, you want to do it numerous times, like at least 10 or 12 times a sitting, days in a row or a couple times a week. So let's practice right now with this. So think about something that you're beating yourself up for, or something that you've been holding yourself back from because of perfectionism. You know, it could be whatever it is, any of the areas we've been looking at, right? And do an even though nevertheless statement. So I gave examples of how even though nevertheless could work if the thing has already happened or is happening. But if it's something that you're holding yourself back on, you can apply even though the nevertheless too, right? So like back to the website with me and Dawn, if we would have had the wherewithal at the time, we could have done, you could have said, even though the website isn't going to turn out perfectly, nevertheless, it's going to, our message will be strong throughout it. Even though we'll not be able to create a perfect website, nevertheless, we really trust the graphic designer to create a feel that represents us, right? So do it, whatever issue that your perfectionism is showing up in right now, do an even though nevertheless. And actually, go ahead and do 5 for now, even though nevertheless it. You may have to think on it a little bit. That's okay. On the same topic, so the even though is always going to be the same, that beginning of the phrase, then after the nevertheless is what's going to be different each of the 5 times. They can be variations on each other, but have each one be different. Can be about a relationship too, right? Even though my mother is never going to be my ideal mother, nevertheless, right? So 5 even though nevertheless is all on the same issue. Give you another minute. You might not get through all 5 right now. It's okay, but see if you can at least do a couple. You have more to do for homework. And when you're done, or when you've gotten through a couple, read them over and see if you can take them in. Take them in beyond your mind. Just really take them into your heart, into your body. We do have a bit more other tools for myth of perfection, but I do want to pause here for a moment on the even though nevertheless, because it is one of my favorites and also one that is really powerful. And I'd love to hear from you, maybe just one of you, what are you seeing? Like what's striking you about even though nevertheless? Or how did it go with your writing of your even though nevertheless's? Stephanie.
Yeah, this was really good. This is so needed right now. It's something that I've been working with a lot, even in some partners in our workshop last week, was me getting really stuck on this project that we're doing on the land here, trying to install a permaculture design and getting really in that black and white of like, either it's going to be designed absolutely perfectly or it sucks and we're like, we're not doing things well, the trees are going to die, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I wrote, even though the gardens may not be designed absolutely perfectly, Nevertheless, it will generate food.
Mm.
Nevertheless, it represents forward momentum. Nevertheless, we will learn from our mistakes. That feels like a big one.
Mm-hmm.
Nevertheless, we are showing our daughter that it is possible to create amazing things with our own two hands. And nevertheless, it will be beautiful here and we will be proud of what we've done.
Mm.
And those all feel like really great reframes for me because I definitely can get into that freeze when I don't feel like it's going to be perfect.
Yeah. Yeah, I could feel, Stephanie, just even as you were reading the statement, that like, I could just feel the energy of it. Like, it feels solid when you say it. Beautiful. Thank you so much
for sharing
that. Yeah, you're welcome. Good. So, okay, before we move on, a couple of things, a couple more things about even though nevertheless. The first is, I'd love for you to just share, you know, you'll share takeaways at the end of the call regardless, but I want to hear more about how this is landing for you. And because I feel so strongly about this process, and I always get so excited teaching it, I want to offer you guys a special little opportunity over this week that I hope you will play with me in and participate in, which is that as a community, if you would like, we're going to be doing even though nevertheless every day for the next 7 days. Because again, when we can do this as a practice, it can help create change even more perspective, change the neural pathways, bring us to closer to our, you know, more aligned action steps. And so the way it'll work is just every day, I'll either do a Facebook Live, if my hair is really awful, I'll just post, the assignment for the day, which is essentially going to be the same assignment every day, which is going to be even though nevertheless is, and I'll ask you guys to participate in different ways and share your process. I'll be doing the even though nevertheless is too with you. I will share my process with you. Let's do it together. I do it for a couple of reasons. Number one, just for you to have this opportunity for you and your own growth. But number two, because it's so easy to assign something like this to a client, but of course it's so hard for clients to do it because who does anything for 7 days when we assign them to, even if they want to, right? Yoga every day, whatever it is. And so you going through this process yourself will give you more insight into how to help support your clients with it. And one of the insights just to start with is holding a tighter container, right? I'm going to hold a tighter container for all of you over the next 7 days, right? Usually if we want our clients to do something like that, we want to hold a little bit of a tighter container for them during the time. And the other thing is don't apply myth of perfection to this little project, right? If you miss a day, do a couple more the next day, but don't just jump off the wagon because of it. So this is by invitation only. It's a commitment. I don't want to make you do it, but I'd love for you to do it if that's something that you feel would be of value, and I'll get it started today for us. Okay. All right. Still got some more things that I want us to take a look at. So other tools for myth of perfection. If you see that a client is going into one of those personas or archetypes that I mentioned before, the sloth, the lazy one, the sloppy one, the failure, the like hyper, you know, on a coffee or adrenaline, just doing so much, needs to be perfect, needs to be perfect, needs to be perfect, you can work with that persona with them, with that archetype. You can have them journal from the voice of that persona or that archetype and see what wants to come through as one way of working with it. some questions that you can ask clients if you sense that they are in the myth of perfection. One question or series of questions is, you know, let's say somebody's working on a project or, you know, whatever it is, you can ask them, what does perfectionism look like with this project, right? Just to ask that question. What does perfectionism look like when it comes to this or when it comes to this relationship? Just that alone is going to open up and create awareness if they've been bringing perfectionist tendencies to it. And then a follow-up question from there, you know, once they answer and they see, oh my gosh, perfection, you know, all of that, follow-up question is, what would be realistic and acceptable here? What would be realistic? What would realistic and acceptable be here? Right? So again, taking, that's just a little bit different than even though nevertheless, but actually it's the same idea behind it, right? What would perfectionism be here is the even though, and then what would realistic and acceptable be here is the nevertheless. Sometimes if I have a client that is stuck in the myth of perfection, I will ask, how hard are you being on yourself here? Right? Just that question alone can pierce the perfectionism. See how hard they're being on themselves. Obviously, there's follow-up questions from there, right? But to open up the conversation. Also, what would you expect of X here, right? X is a person that they love, that they don't tend to project their perfectionism onto, right? What would you expect of, you know, their partner's name here, a friend's name here, a, you know, mentor, whatever it is? It will help them, again, kind of get a handle on how they're bringing perfectionism or how they're being hard on themselves. Another question that I'll sometimes ask, what if it didn't have to be perfect? What if it didn't have to be perfect? Can help a client see their perfectionism and then kind of bring back to the reality space or see the fears, right? What if it didn't have to be perfect? So that can, that question can oftentimes open up a lot. A kind of fun little exercise for someone who tends to be in their hyper-perfectionist, like always painstakingly needing to get it right, you know, after a discussion about their perfectionist looking at some of these issues, is to ask them every day for a week to make a conscious mistake. It's just a fun little way to bring some of that perfectionist from that hyper place into a more balanced place, right? Where the client can actually harness, like have more control over their perfectionist and make themselves make a mistake every day. Another tool that I'll sometimes bring in for situations where a client is in the myth of perfection is the idea of growth mindset. I'm not going to go into right now all about growth mindset, but if you Google growth mindset, you'll find lots of great information on it. The main point behind having a growth mindset is that the road to success is always under construction. The road to success is always under construction. So basically, a growth mindset is the opposite of a perfectionist mindset. A perfectionist mindset is hardened into, like, it already has to all be here, and I have to already know everything, and I have to be able to already be getting it correct. Whereas a growth mindset is, I am going to learn and improve if I stay on this road of trying to achieve what I want, right? Like, not that the perfectionism comes by being on the road, but the improvement and the mastery comes by staying in the process, right? It's kind of like the power of yes. Instead of saying, ugh, I'll never fill my program. I haven't filled my program yet, right? Just that one little word, yet, can shift the whole perspective. All right, I'm going to pause here and first just ask you, what are you taking from this call? Write down your takeaway. I'd love to hear what it is, either in a few minutes after I give homework, or please post it in the Facebook group. You've got some homework this week. So first of all, we're going to do the Even Though Nevertheless challenge. If you'd like to participate, I'd love to have you. If you want to go deeper with all of this also, I want to invite you to dialogue with your inner perfectionist. So you can even just take a moment right now, close your eyes, and just ask your inner perfectionist to come forward. Connect in with what the inner perfectionist looks like, what they wear, how they hold themselves up. And then for homework, connect with this one and just channel your perfectionist, write from your perfectionist voice, see what message it has for you. If you're working with a coaching partner, if, again, we can't like manufacture some of these issues, but if it's applicable, whatever your partner brings to you this week, look at it through the lens of the myth of perfection. And if you are working with clients, I'd go through your client roster and just make note of where clients, you sense clients are struggling with myth of perfection right now, how it's showing up for them, and just keep that kind of that information handy as pieces come up in sessions. All right, we are at time, but I'm going to hang on an extra couple minutes in case there are any questions or anything that anybody wants to share by way of takeaways. So star two, anybody have any questions or anything they want to share? My computer is a little slow today, so let me pick back up, see if anybody has their hand raised. All right. Christine.
Thank you for this. This was huge today. Huge. Lots of processing to take place. And I'm actually sitting here questioning whether I've actually if I'm actually in my coaching sessions relying on my client's need for perfectionism to get results. I don't know if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I think it does speak a little bit more to it, but tell me a little bit more what you mean.
Well, because when I started thinking, like, you know, so again, like I'm like the other coach who talked about, I, you know, never really saw myself as being that black and white, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I perceive that I am very gray when it comes to my clients. But if I thought I was gray and I'm actually black and white, I'm wondering if I'm not sort of relying on or expect, like if there's not a part of me that actually likes my clients or wants my clients to have.
To be perfectionist, because then they'll create more results.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right? They'll show up. They'll do the work.
I think I'm so happy that that's coming up. I'm glad you're mentioning it for you and for all of us. We want to check our filters on that, right? Now, there's always something good that comes from anything, right? Or else human beings wouldn't hold on to it. That's why I asked earlier, what's positive about your perfectionism? So the idea is, if you see that you are doing this with clients, you want to work, Christine, for them to hold on to their good, for example, like their good work habits, right?
Mm-hmm.
But to know the difference between a good work habit and like a work habit on steroids, and then how they beat themselves up for it if they don't, right? So it's not that they're letting go of the positive, but they're letting go of the perfectionism. Is it helpful to think of it in that way?
Yeah. It's sort of helping them to kind of get to where they're maintaining the motivation to show up at their best or to give their best.
Yeah.
While still giving themselves permission and being compassionate with themselves, right? Yeah. With wherever they happen to be or however what they're working on turns out. So it's kind of finding the balance between those two things, if that makes
100%.
Sense.
100%.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm so glad you brought that forward.
Thank you.
Emily.
Hi. Mine was just a quick question in regards to, for the hyper-perfectionist, ask them to make a conscious mistake. That one, it was interesting. It sent like a shock through me. I was like, oh my God, how can I do that? So that's something to look at personally. But could you provide like an example of what you would,
It would depend on the person and their situation and, you know, whatever it is. But it might be someone who, let's say they bring perfectionism to how they respond to clients. The quote unquote mistake might be that they don't respond to any client emails for a day, right? Now, unless they have a policy that they're returning emails within one day, right? That's different, but nobody should have that policy, right? If they always get their kids' lunches exactly on time, you know, that they're late with it, or they get sloppy with the lunch, right? Little things, not something that's going to, like, create, you know, havoc in their lives, but to practice in little fun ways, consciously making mistakes or not being perfect. If they put makeup on every single day, it's part of their perfectionism, you know, as much as they can tolerate, don't put eyeliner on, you know, or put eyeliner on, especially now during the pandemic, nobody sees us, like, in a smudgy, weird way. Little things that aren't going to make them, you know, back to stretch, risk, or die, that it's not like a die if they did it, but to bring playfulness and to start bringing more flexibility to this need to be perfect. Is that helpful? Does that make sense?
Very helpful. Thank you very much. Yeah.
Yeah, you're welcome. Anne?
So there's a takeaway for me around celebration and hard work. So I see how, in a different way than I have before, I think, how completely exhausting it is to ping pong, not just because of the back and forth, but because there is no place to rest, even when you get close to or perceive, okay, I got it right, because as soon as that point is reached, it's back to okay, what's the next thing to fix? What's the next thing to achieve? And I never get to enjoy my successes. I never get to celebrate, but everything is constant work then to achieve the next thing. And one of my primary caregivers was my grandmother. My mom's mom lived with us, and she raised her 8 younger siblings through the Great Depression. And I saw her when she wasn't, like, resting because she was older and had bad hips and stuff, which I saw, I, like, recognized as a thing she needed to do because something was wrong. Mm-hmm. Everything was constant work and constant effort, and there was a very clear message that you don't get praised for your effort, you don't get praised for your work that you've put in, because that's just what you have to do to get by. That's just what you have to do to survive. Mm-hmm. And so not only did I learn from my mom that you never get to celebrate your successes, but you also never get to appreciate yourself for the effort that you put in. So there's never anything to celebrate. And that's completely exhausting, too. Yeah. And so I have some notes for myself to really explore where could I celebrate just being in the middle ground? Where could that be a celebration unto itself, and how could I shift the context?
I love that.
And then I also saw just how profoundly I fear not being safe and see not feeling safe as a personal failing and getting hurt as a personal failing, because it's all wrapped into that. If you're doing it right, there won't ever be that gap,
right.
And it's such,
which is
a
such
trap.
A myth in and of itself.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's, I didn't realize the extent of how huge those two traps are and just how much they lock together.
Yeah. I'm so glad you're seeing all of that. It feels really important. I'm excited to see what's going to come through.
Yeah.
Thanks.
And finally, Joe.
Oh, hi, Joanna. Thank you. Well, one of the things was we were talking about, I realized, you know, like when you were talking about the growth mindset and how it's always under construction. And I can wrap my head around that, you know, I'm moving towards and I take the, you know, 2 steps forward, 1 step back, or, you know, things kind of seem to, like, I'm not progressing, and then it's hard to find out, like, to look at what is progression, because I'm thinking it has to be a certain way.
Yeah.
And, that, like, okay, but I need to see, and what occurred to me is this idea about success is really a perfection thing, and it's like, yes, I'm making progress, but I'm not. It's not successful unless it has a particular criteria, right? And like, yes, it's better than last year, but it's not. Like, I haven't succeeded. It's almost like the interchangeably success and perfection.
Yeah,
are,
because you're conflating those two concepts. You feel like you're never achieving success.
Yes. Yeah. And I can always find reasons why it's not. And then, it occurred to me that somewhere, and I'm not certain what it looks like, I'll be successful when, but if it has a perfection in its nature, it'll never happen. Right.
Yeah.
It's because by nature, it's not possible. So, I was like, oh.
Yeah, I want to give you a piece of homework.
Yeah.
Which is, I want you to write down, I'm already successful because. And then, Cho, I want you to list out, and there should be at least 15 things on this list, if not many more. I actually want you to list out all of the reasons why you already are successful. That doesn't mean that there aren't different levels to the success or next evolutions, But I want you to really take in how you are. There are so many ways where you already are successful. You're like a master practitioner for decades.
You know, it's when someone else says it, it sounds great. And then the first thing that my brain goes to is like, well, if that were true, like, thank you very much. If that were true, like there's something
that's the myth of perfection right there. You're making it either success or nothing. Success either has to be perfect or it's completely discounted.
Right. Or all the time.
Exactly.
Like
all the time. Right.
It's an all the time thing. Yeah. Continuous. Okay. But at least, yeah, I've managed to survive to 55.
You have. And much more.
And much more. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah.
You're welcome. Thank you, everybody, for your energy and all that you brought. I hope that you enjoyed today's call and it was helpful. I can't wait to connect on the Facebook group. I will talk to you guys soon. Bye.